My guest today is award-winning film music composer John Koutsalinis, who has composed high-quality film scores with notable collaborations such as Gary Kurtz of Star Wars 4 and 5, David Levy, the concept designer for Avatar 2 and 3 and The Rise of Skywalker. He's also composed the score for the film Accident Man, Hitman's Holiday for Sony Entertainment and directors Harry and George Kirby. In addition, he's composed music for The Great Alaskan Race by writer-director Brian Presley, also starring Henry Thomas of E.T. and Legends of the Fall and the late Treat Williams. He's also composed the music for the films Deuce with David O'Hara and Claudia Black and Nephilim with John Savage as the music performed by the City of Prague Philharmonic Orchestra. But John has also composed music for over 40 short films, including music for Dragon Ball Z and the League of Legends, which has collectively generated over 15 million views. He is the recipient of 6 awards and several nominations, including nominations by the prestigious Jerry Goldsmith Awards. So without further ado, let's welcome film music composer John Koutsalinis to the show. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, how did you get into music in general?
Well, music became a passion since I was a child, really, because I grew up in the 80s with, you know, John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith and all these amazing composers. My very first film that got hardwired in me was The Empire Strikes Back, and it's still my most favorite film of all time. And when I first heard John Williams, something happened. Something got again hardwired in me, and it became a goal since I was a child to be involved in film scoring. It took quite a very long time to actually achieve that goal because, you know, life takes you into all sorts of separate, you know, different paths. But yeah, it was always, music was always in my life since that age. I became a soundtrack collector in my early years, and I was listening to the greats, as I said, Jerry Goldsmith, my favorite ones, John Williams, Jerry Goldsmith, pretty much all the time. I was collecting other scores from Alan Silvestri, and then on I, you know, came to discover other composers such as Elliot Goldenthal, whom I really loved. And finally, I got the opportunity to study music in my later life and get to a level where I could write film scores. And in 2011, I finally got the opportunity and the will to get started as a full-time film music composer.
Well, you know, for a lot of people who sit around and they listen to music, they're listening to their favorite artist, they sing along with their favorite songs. But yeah. How do you fall in love with music scores? Because do you watch the film to enjoy the music, or do you just listen to the music by itself? How does one get into enjoying that? Because a lot of it does sound very orchestra-like.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a very good question, actually. The thing is that I, when I was a child, I went to watch The Empire Strikes Back quite a few times, and I realized that the music did something to me. It wasn't just an accompanying, you know, factor. And I did something a little naughty. I actually got a tape player, you know, back in the 80s, and I recorded the audio. And I was listening back to back all the time at home. And I think that kind of, you know, stuck with me. And I didn't even know there were things like you could go out there and buy a vinyl and listen to the soundtrack. And a friend of mine said, you know, you really love The Empire Strikes Back. I've got this album. And as I said, the minute that the needle hit the vinyl, that was it. I was completely taken. I think soundtracks have the capacity to evoke emotions and to tell a story. And this is what I really love about listening to them, because it's not just about listening to a piece of music. It actually tells you what's happening. It gives you the emotions. You know, sometimes with people like John Williams, you actually see the character when you hear the music, because a character could have a theme, you know. But It's a very good question you've asked, actually, because over the years I came to listen to soundtracks that I didn't even watch the film in the end, and I totally fell in love with soundtracks. For instance, and nothing to do about the film, I just didn't find the time to actually, get to watch said film. I remember I listened to 7 Years in Tibet by John Williams, and I completely was bowled over by the score. And I never actually got to watch the film, as I said, not because I didn't want to, but there's just so many films around, and I'm still busy. I never got the opportunity. Or there might be a film that I maybe watched once, but the soundtrack really stuck with me, like Ennio Morricone's The Vision, which is a complete classic soundtrack. So it's a very good question. Yes, and my answer is that the music has been written so skillfully, and it's such a wonderful thing to listen to. And also, don't forget that, especially with the music that I grew up with, because now the scene has changed a little bit, soundtracks have become more of a hybrid production, i.e., it's not fully orchestral anymore. You have synthesizers and samples and vocals and this, that, the other, which is fair enough because music evolves. But when I was growing up, music was pretty much orchestral, right? And 95% of music was orchestral. So you got to remember, understand that these people like John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith, they rooted their compositions from a tradition that goes back a few hundred years now. So I suppose it's operatic. I suppose it's like listening to a ballet without seeing the ballet,
You know,
and
there are three films, four films that come to mind that the moment you hear the music, you know the film. Star Wars is one, all of the James Bond films. Well, you could even put Mission Impossible in there. Chariots of Fire. Which is probably rated as one of the top soundtracks ever
of all
written and
time,
recorded for film. And see those, James Bond films, you have that same type of tone in every film. So even if you didn't watch the film, but you heard the music, you'd go, yeah, that's James Bond. And even though they have an artist recording the so-called theme song for each picture, we don't necessarily remember all of the theme songs, but we remember the music bed from the scenes because
Of
it's
course.
something that we always know. I mean, if you look back, we can say, of course, there was Duran Duran, there was Adele, my gosh, there's so many others that sang the songs for James Bond, but it was the music bed that is the most recognizable. It goes in the same line as Star Wars. But then there are films that use music to strike suspense and fear, like Jaws.
Yeah,
You know?
absolutely, absolutely,
So
absolutely.
how
And
does one
also,
write, let's say with Jaws, is it writing for a particular scene? Or is it just writing a piece of music for the suspenseful parts?
that's a good question. With Jaws, I think the biggest problem, because again, I'm a huge Spielberg fan as well as John Williams. So you're probably talking to somebody who's watched every documentary out there going and every behind the scenes. So, famously, Steven Spielberg had a horrible time making that film, and because it was very complex. And he, went back to America and visited John Williams, and he said, "Okay, so fantastic, let's hear the theme." And John took two fingers and he went dad and dad, and he started sweating. Spielberg thought, "My God, I can't have a complete nightmare with the score because the film." And he couldn't actually quite get it, bless him, until he went to the recording stage. And even then, he said, I think at times he said he couldn't quite get it either then. And he then realized after years have passed how important the music was to the success of the film. The Jaws, It's an interesting topic because a lot of people say that it's a two-note score. And I always have sometimes when I speak to friends to, correct them and say, nah, it's a million-note score, but the theme has two notes. It's actually extremely complex. Jaws is an extremely complex piece of music. If you actually analyze what's going on in there, all the harmonic progressions and everything John Williams uses are extremely advanced, And what happens is that what I love about Williams is that he only not only uses a theme to incorporate within writing, but he also writes riffs, shall I say, recognizable riffs that he uses throughout his composition. And then he steps on that, and then he moves and modulates and goes up and down in a different, parts of the register and the orchestration, which he uses to his advantage. And pretty much this is how he goes about writing, especially that particular score. But as I said, there is no oversimplification about it because it's a very, very complex score. And
For a
yes.
music composer that does score films, do you? Because I don't know, so I may ask some dumb questions in this,
Oh, no. Not to
but do
worry.
you? Does the director send you the film so that as you're watching it, you're getting an idea on what type of score you're going to write for it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Basically, what happens is that, first of all, sometimes I have discussions with directors before I even sit down to write anything. Other times, depending on where the films is in terms of its development, it might get a video with the film. Sometimes you might have a temp track, what is called a temp track, which is basically a music track created by other soundtracks, just to give me an idea of what the director might be looking for. And then we're having very in-depth discussions about the feel, about a thematic or lack of thematic material, because sometimes people may not want to have a theme. And it does happen. Some people want to stray away from the traditionalism of having a theme for your film. And then basically it's just the job of, as I said, after having a general discussion, we may or may not sometimes have what's called a spotting session, whereby you're going to sit down with the director, and then the director is going to point you to the points where he or she wants music to or doesn't want music to. And then you go away and you write to the best of your ability and create the score. But the process is very much the same in that you always have to have a discussion. You always have to watch the film several times. If there is a temp track, listen to the temp track very carefully to see and understand and feel and really talk a lot with the director, because talking to me unlocks a lot of things, unlocks desires to do with music. And because you got to understand, music is not something that can be very easily articulated. So directors can't really tell you, I want a staccatissimo there and I want, a crescendo there and diminuendo. They don't know these terms, and rightfully so. So they can only talk to you in normal, everyday talk. And you then have to somehow interpret that and understand what they want. But the most important thing for me is that every director is a completely different and unique entity. And this is where the creative part and the creative process starts from. Even before, I've been sent a film, is that I personally want to climb into the director's head and understand and see their vision, because every director is a new chapter to me. It's a new book, actually. They have their own world, their likes and dislikes, from the point where they started growing up to the point where you actually met. What is it that they want to convey with their film? What is their emotion that they want to put through? In essence, I think you have to maybe have some understanding of how to have some a degree of psychology in terms of analyzing situations you're coming into in terms of meeting people, you know. And this is why most of the times I strive to listen really carefully to what people are telling me before we even, you know, go into getting temp tracks and having pieces of music sent to me. Because, you know, as I said, each director is a new chapter, a new book. You got to understand what they want. You got to respect what they want. You got to climb into their world. You got to see what the film is. And then you will have a broader idea of how to approach the film and how to write for it. So beyond that process, then we sit down and we discuss the musical side of things, i.e. will it be orchestral? Will it be hybrid? Will it be all synthesized? What is the texture we're looking for? What are we looking for in terms of what we're trying to say? Does it have to be aggressive? Does it have to be gentle? You know, so all these things have to come into play to write the score. And then if somebody wants a score that has melodic content, then my job is to sit down and write a few themes, get back to them, hopefully, you know, get the okay, get the thumbs up, or go back, rework it. And then it's the work of sitting down and actually writing, which is a very much going backwards and forwards process.
Well, you're actually walking into the director's vision and to bring, well, to really to add color to that vision. And so I can't imagine the pages of notes that you must take sitting down with the director before you actually begin writing. And
it's crazy because you got to think of one thing is that, you know, you're the tail end of an epic story, right? And the epic story is not the film. The epic story is to make the film, okay? Because you don't know what this person has gone through to actually come to you and write that music, right? From the very beginning of the inception of the film to maybe find the people, get it financed, which as we both know, it can be a complete nightmare, you know, and you finally get to write this. So you got to respect the journey, right? You got to respect the journey. So you got to give your all into writing a score and doing the best you can.
I mean, I even went to your website and went to the page with the multiple tracks and the scores. I was actually amazed and even made me more intrigued. So can you kind of explain to all of us the different types of musical movie scores? So you had epic, choral, and orchestral. You had warm and thematic, lighthearted, cutting edge, and hybrid, and of course, horror.
Well, the reason why what's there, because you got to understand that a lot of people, they may have met me for the first time ever, and they don't know what I can do. And the thing is that a composer has to be like a chameleon, you know, you can't write one style. You got to be able to write everything. And I think the best example I can give you is with Accident Man, the second one that I wrote music for. And something that may come as a surprise to you is that the most complex and difficult style of film is a comedy. And the comedy is difficult because you need to write, for instance, on that film, I was called to write hybrid music, which is orchestral with synthesized effects and synthesized toms and kind of Hans Zimmer style, to give you a better idea. I was called to write 1970s detective kind of music, very akin to maybe, I'd say the closest I could get to is, I can't remember the name of the gentleman. But you get the idea. It's just all detective 70s films.
Well, yeah, because I remember I've actually seen Hans Zimmer in concert.
Yeah.
And I still remember it because it was Hans Zimmer and Nils Schon of Journey, which was funny because together they opened up for Journey, and that was with Journey with Steve Perry back in the day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that also brings to, you know, many people think about, okay, musical scores for film, but there are very recognizable music scores for television shows. And Hans Zimmer probably holds the record for Miami Vice, because that's the one that everybody remembers the most. Or you may remember the intro for Friends and Cheers. Yeah. My gosh, the list goes, even some of the detective shows like NYPD Blue, Grey's Anatomy. So, you know, the list goes on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to go back to the different genres, you know, as I said, maybe somebody might go on my website, as I said, they might not know what I can do. So choral orchestral is what it says. It's basically an orchestra with a choir. You've got the warm and thematic, so basically something that will maybe be more akin to or more apt for films that that might have a love theme or something like that. The cutting edge is pretty much, you know, hybrid electronic music with orchestral scoring and something that would go very well with any latest Mission Impossible movies or, you know, this sort of writing. And the reason to differentiate them like this is so that the listener won't get lost in, you know, a massive music player, because you could have all the tracks in the world, and then anybody can go, okay, so what am I supposed to listen to? So this was pretty much a practical reason why I did this. But as I said earlier, you know, you have to know pretty much as humanly possible in terms of music and write in all sorts of genres and styles. Because as I said, a film like Accident Man, it asked everything musically but the kitchen sink. And I'm not exaggerating. I wrote everything. We even went back to some popular music of the 40s and 50s that I had to write for a very short segment. And when the director and producer asks for that, you got to be able and equipped to write that and be able to deliver. So it's a very multifaceted industry. And musically, you got to be ready. You got to be ready to do it.
Now, okay, so this brings, because here's what I love. I love the fact that you work, let's say you're working with an orchestra. You've written the music, the conductor's reading the music, bringing the orchestra in and bringing this music to life. And John Williams is going to always use an orchestra. But what is happening in film today are a lot of these films, or maybe they're lower budget films, so to speak, are they going to a lot of the manufactured type music? Maybe they're just pulling out a Pro Tools program, or they're just finding royalty-free music to slap in the background.
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. Well, basically what happens is that extremely low budget films, like no budget films, I don't think they have an opportunity to hire any live musicians. So that they will approach a composer where he or she has a computer with, you know, various programs and music sounds, which I basically, to make it clear, and so that we don't get the wrong end of the story, they're not pre-played you know, libraries. It's not that you put your finger on the keyboard and you hear an entire composition. That's not what they do. They're basically orchestral sounds to be played like normal musical keyboards, i.e. you've got strings, you got to play the strings. If you've got brass, you got to play the brass, and so on and so forth. So a composer who might not work for a little bit of money might get that short film or that you know, feature film, and might dress the film musically. Now, with larger, you know, films where they can get some better budget, what happens is that usually they give the opportunity to work with some live musicians, because the orchestra is a very expensive thing. Basically, full music departments are extremely expensive. Just to give you an idea, I think films that have 230 million budget, they could easily spend 2.5-3 million just on the music. And you know, and a very moderate budget film, the whole budget could be 3 million. So you understand what the problem is there and what the issue could be, you know, faced with going and hiring the London Symphony Orchestra for 95 minutes, correct? So it's a very expensive undertaking. But what happens is that basically you can hire some live musicians, and you can use what we call music libraries, you know. And these music libraries, they're doing a good job in representing an orchestral sound, representing obviously hybrid sound, because a lot of them can be synthesized. And basically, this is how a lot of composers bring the music up to pass for middle to low budget films. Again, not because they don't want to use live, you know, musicians, but I don't think there is an actual choice in the matter, you know, and you
Well,
have
yeah,
to be
because you
able
got to
to.
work with you got to work with within a particular budget, and
Of
because
course.
of today's technology, there's a way to work around those budgets. And of course, we know that the big blockbuster films, or I should say, the big expensive films, are going to be using an orchestra and live musicians to create the soundtrack. Because I've always kind of wondered. Because I've seen, a lot of these design programs that are online now, and they have audio, and you get to go in there and pick a particular track and add it to your photo or to your little video to make it sound better and made it look like you really did something, which is great and fun for a lot of people. And I got to thinking, is there, and after hearing you talk, I don't think there is, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Is there a particular formula that music composers who score films go by based on a film that is dramatic or a comedy or maybe even sci-fi, for example?
Yeah, of course. I think there's always a door you can open and say, well, you know, if we're going to do a dramatic film, we can go towards that direction. And again, that goes back to the discussions with the director. But that doesn't mean that you can open the drawer and take something and just use that. So also, writing a score is a very complex undertaking in terms of maybe trying to create something unique for the film, something will work for just for the film, you know. So if what you're asking is, in effect, could I say I'm a producer, could I go to a company that sells pre-recorded music and furnish my entire film like this? The answer is no, because first of all, you won't have a unique score, you won't have a unique theme. The tracks won't be long enough to have a score that will be able to be the same, right? So it will sound like bits and pieces, you know, from other soundtracks, you know, and other works. So that's not a good solution for a producer, a film producer, you know. I have seen maybe very low budget films that they're taking that path, but in my view, it's not a successful way to actually go about it to create a soundtrack. You do need to have bespoke writing. You do need to have, and let me tell you, I've been doing this since 2011, full time, and with confidence, I can tell you that it's, you know, writing a film score is a very complex thing from the point of view of actually making the music fit with the scene and the needs of a director. It's an impossible thing to just go and pick up something from somewhere and say, well, I'll slap that there and that will work for me. It just doesn't work.
Okay, you bring up a very good question. So let's say once you've created the musical score for a particular film, how does the editing work in taking your score and then fitting it in along with the editing so that way it flows and it makes sense?
Well, what happens is that back in the day, in the 80s, middle 90s, it used to be what it was called a locked film. So basically, what happens is that the director would say, that's it, John, I've got the locked film. You're right on that. Okay. Now, with the advent of technology, because we got a lot of digital tools and stuff like that, there's no such thing as a locked film anymore. Basically, you can make an edit just like that, just because the director could wake up in the morning and not like scene 35 and just change it. And it has happened to me in many occasions that, after we agreed on a film and the film was sent to me, I would then get to send bits and pieces that they were different, and then I'd have to go back and fix if I could. But usually what happens is that after composers deliver, then it's really up to the production team, and the production team obviously has to have a complete freedom of what to do with the score. So what they do, what they might do sometimes is that something that fit perfectly, and if they make a small cut and it doesn't fit perfectly anymore, they can actually cut it themselves and create some form of a crossfade and make it work. Obviously, this is not ideal, but it has happened to the best movies in the world. I remember I was watching Return of the Jedi, and right at the end of the attack to the Death Star, John Williams wrote a piece of music that obviously worked fantastically well, but it didn't work fantastically well later on, and they had to cut it. And you can really hear it in the film that has been cut, pretty brutally, actually. So that's crazy. But nowadays, as I said, there's no such thing as a, locked film. Films are edited all the time. However, before I deliver the music to the film, we most of the times agree, 99 out of 100 times I'm getting a final cut that we agree with, right? So basically what happens then, we get the music that's been approved. I then send, after the individual cues, I send the entire score. When the entire score is approved, I then send to the editor the cues that have time codes. So the editor knows exactly where to put the cues with the time code of the film. And that's how it works. They then take the music, they fit it on the time codes, and then they make their final mixing and finally becomes to be the music on the film.
Well, I was on your site, and this brings up something else because, which I love the explanation when it comes to the editing, because editing is an art,
Oh,
and
God, yes.
to have to take the music score and so that answers my question when it comes to all of the time codes and the cues. So that makes complete sense to me. But I was also found something that intrigued me as I was on your site. There is one that you did for the movie Deuce called The Vision, but this
Yeah.
one had vocals. How does one work with vocals on a movie score? Because then the tone changed when you composed Obtaining the Core in the movie Deuce, which was a dramatic cutting edge score. So how do you go with vocals in a score? How do you write that, and how does that happen? And then making a tonal change.
That's a very, yeah, that's a good question, but the answer is not as dramatic as the film. Basically, what it is that the director may turn around and say, "Look, I want something extremely dramatic, but I want it to have XYZ feel to it." And it could be the director that would basically make a request to have a vocalist in the queue that would some might sound Middle Eastern or something like that. So it's really down to the direction of the director to do with the music of what they want to hear at that point. With the next cue that you mentioned, basically the scene completely changed. And the director said to me, "I just want action there, John." Right? So we switched to action. The first cue that you mentioned with the vocals, it was actually a very wonderful scene of a flashback that that woman had with her child, which passed away, unfortunately, and saw her thinking, she had an opportunity to see her. And, the wonderful thing about this is that at that particular point, there was no dialogue and there was nothing else. It was just the music. And I want to watch it on the final dubbing theater. And it was just extremely loud. It was extremely huge. I was really, really happy because usually our music is buried in dialogue and sound effects and what have you. But that was on its own, which was wonderful, you
Well,
know.
the vocals on that track, that can be described as haunting.
I appreciate that. I appreciate
Brings
that.
back where because that type of vocal is very celestial in nature. I don't want to call it ghost-like. I think it's more haunting or more of a remembering when it comes to a scene like that. And so I was very curious because I'm like, okay, if you're scoring a film, but then there's vocal and not singing vocal. I mean, that's just like picking a bunch of songs from the 80s and 90s and putting a bunch of songs in a film. But to have that type of vocal, I mean, does that person go in with an orchestra or they're just going into a sound booth to record the voice, whatever the recorded track has been created?
Very, very rarely you'll get everybody at the same on the same room. I think one of the very few times that I had an entire orchestra recording was with the film Nephilim, which was a complete blessing because believe it or not, even in the biggest productions, you don't have 80 people in one room playing. So yeah, they just don't do it anymore. They break down the orchestra to have flexibility on the mix. Where on that particular one, I've managed to convince the production team to actually have a full orchestra playing together. Because for me, the sound of a full orchestra is not the same as a broken up orchestra, and there is a very good reason for that, is how the instruments resonate with one another when the orchestra plays in the same room, and also how the air in the recording hall reacts and hits the microphone. It's a completely different thing than when you record strings and then brass and then the woodwinds separately, and then you put them in the mixing room. It's just not quite the same. So I was very thrilled to have been able to do that and had that opportunity. Now with Deus, the vocal was completely different, and also we didn't use an orchestra for that film. It was mostly done electronically. That particular point of the film, it was basically a one tone, one note composition that kept growing into a massive compositional undertaking, if you'd like, that it was a mixture between an orchestra and synthesizers that they were distorted to a crazy degree. That's why I said I was really happy when I was listening to it on the mixing booth, on the mixing stage of the film, because it was just wonderful to hear it so loud. So yeah, that person went into a different vocal booth, then I took the vocals and we did the mix afterwards.
Well, you scored the film The Great Alaskan Race, which the film alone is a fantastic film. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never seen The Great Alaskan
Thank
Race,
you.
you need to see this film. Great story. What was it like creating the score for that one?
The Great Alaskan Race, and that's to, you know, not take anything from all the other films that I work with, including Hostile Territory, which was created by the same director, Brian Presley, was to this day the most wonderful collaboration I had and the most wonderful opportunity to write a film score. And that was for many, many reasons. First of all, it was great meeting Brian Presley. A great person, fantastic director, and wonderful story writer. Secondly, the film was incredible in terms of the story, because that, I don't know if you know that, but that's a real story actually that happened.
Yes.
So that's a
Based on
real
a true
story.
story.
It's based on a true story. Very harrowing situation to, and that pulls your heartstrings straight away. You know, when you're called to write something like that. The other side of things that it was a huge blessing for me is that Brian Presley loves thematic material. And that was such a blessing for me because I was called to write towards the genre that I grew up with in terms of thematic style and orchestral style and that sort of approach, which was wonderful to me, you know, and it was one of those collaborations that they went so well. I think from what I remember, most of the cues were accepted and we just carried on like that. And everybody was really happy with the score. And we had the opportunity to go and record with members of the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra, which is an absolutely beautiful orchestra. And, you know, to put it all together, it was just such a wonderful collaboration. As I said to you, to this day, the most wonderful collaboration I've had.
Well, I'm going to ask you about a comparison because as it like a film, The Great Alaskan Race, then you did a short film, for example, The Seed of June, which is a 3D animation project. Is scoring a live action film versus an animated film different or is the concept the same?
The concept of musical composition is the same. It doesn't change. What changes is the thematic material, the source. That's what changes. Because you've touched upon like a night and day situation here. Because The Great Alaskan Race was a beautiful story, although it was a harrowing situation. It was told very beautifully and was filmed fantastically and everything was, you know, under a wonderful premise to work with in terms of the production team. And The Seed of Juna was the darkest horror that you could ever imagine, right? And in terms of what the theme of the film was, so these were such different levels of production. And the director has worked as a CGI artist for films such as Infinity Wars. He was a very, very, very high level. He's a very, very high level individual. And the funny thing about it is that we had a chat about it. I tried to understand the world. And I've made the mistake, quote unquote, of asking him to tell me what the film is all about. And I've spent the next 2 hours on the phone just listening to him explaining to me this massive world that he had created, and we were basically looking at a little, you know, stamp, you know, post-it stamp.
I mean, it was a short film.
The short film was basically that much of the story of what he was actually trying to say. So, in a few minutes, would have to capture the world. You know, it was such a huge undertaking. We had massive discussions about the way it should sound and the theme. And, you know, it's so weird because both things are films, but both films are so opposite, you know, that it becomes, as I said to you earlier, you know, a director is a book. A director is a planet. You step on someone's world, right? And that's exactly what happened then. And thankfully, that went really well. I think we had about a million. I think we're reaching 1.5 million views now on that video. It went extremely well, and rightfully so. I thought it was completely unique. It had some Lovecraft, you know, influences, which I love as well. And it was a very dark story. Incredible. Unfortunately, to this day, I don't think, you know, we've managed to take it any further in terms of production, but it's a little gem to me, you know, that's out there and people can go and watch it.
Well, I have done, I think, well over 60 interviews on short films with film directors. Yeah. And every once in a while, the question comes up about the music score. And do you get directors? And short films is where you get people with no budgets. You get people who hopefully they can do a film for $25,000. You get a few that are 100. Then you get a studio that would spend $1 million on a short film only because they're trying to buy an Oscar. But that's another story. But for those that are up and coming filmmakers, do they ever come to you and say, I would like to have my short film scored, but I don't know what I want?
That's a good question. Actually, thankfully, this hasn't happened to me. Most of the people that I speak to, they have an idea, at least, of what they want to hear, you know, and discussions bring out what needs to be heard and how it needs to be heard, which is a complete blessing. That actually happened to me in a feature film. I had a director who couldn't quite bring out with words what he wanted, okay? He told me, I want a score, but I don't want a score. So my job was to interpret that and understand what he's talking about. Because it was a very difficult undertaking, because that individual didn't really know how to articulate music and couldn't find anything in the world to give me as a temp track to use. And so I will paraphrase James Horner, because James Horner, in an interview, he said that it's the English of the language of the body, the English of the body, that sometimes tells more than what a director can actually articulate. And this is why he really loved, God bless him, he passed away, but he really loved living in LA, because he was close to James Cameron, because he wanted to have that closeness. He didn't want to talk over emails. He didn't want to talk over Zoom. He wanted to be there and see his reaction when he was listening to the music. And that would tell him a lot. More than actual words, okay? So the exact same happened to me, strangely. I went into a session to do with sound design, and the producer said to me, John, just please come to the sound design, sit down, see if you can figure this thing out. And I said, all right. And so when I saw his movements, something clicked with me. I can't quite explain it. And I said to myself, he doesn't want music. This person wants a musical sound design. It's not music. It's basically cutting edge sounds, right? Hybrids and distorted and things like that, that he wanted to use for the film in order to tell the story, as opposed to hire an orchestra and tell the story musically. And that film was In Extremis. We did a film called In Extremis, and it was such a harrowing story of a man who was in his dying minutes because he, sorry to bring the show down, I know this is not light, but he committed suicide because he was very guilty about his daughter's death, because she died of cancer and he wasn't there for her because he was a high-flying executive in London, and he was making a lot of money, and he had no time for his family, and he couldn't take her death, and he basically tried to commit suicide. And the entire film was those few minutes and what he was seeing and experiencing. So, you know, it wasn't, again, just to paraphrase what the director said, it wasn't a horror film. It was a film about horror of the death of his daughter. And how do we then and musically go and interpret that, right? For instance, he was in a boathouse, and he said, when we see that boathouse, he said, John, you will see sunlight and beautiful surrounding, but to that man, that's a horrible thought, right? So the music had to be horror there. Had to be really horrific, screeching sound that took your ear off to make the listener understand that this is a painful memory, right?
Well, is it more of the sounds that was used? I mean, is it more of the sounds that you would think about using Halloween, like the film Halloween?
Not quite, because Halloween. Yeah, not quite, because that would be more, I would say, formulaic. I would say that would be more formulaic of a horror film. That is more of a sound design.
Like Psycho?
Not even that. Not even that. Less musical. It's basically a sound design of sounds that they sound painful to the ear. They don't sound right. They're dissonant. They're horrible. They're awful. You know, the whole film was caved into itself, and the music had to somehow, you know, somehow had to portray this musically. And the whole film went like that until the very end, when he came back to life again, and we went into musical mode, and we wrote actual music. And I wrote a theme for, at the very end, when she spoke to him, you know, and she said, "I love you, Daddy," and he said, "I know," you know. And then we had a theme that was beautifully played by members of the Prague Philharmonic and sung by a really, really lovely singer, Melanie Dantas Mortimer, absolutely wonderful singer. And again, this is the you know, it's the relationship between director and composer, which to me is a very, you know, it's, shall I say, precious is a silly little world, but it is really in the end of the day. Because imagine if, okay, obviously that's not on my level in terms of who I am and what I do, but imagine Steven Spielberg never meeting with John Williams, right? It's just like we as listeners, we got this incredible gift of all these incredible soundtracks that came over the years just because, you know, Steven Spielberg had the, you know, he took the initiative to talk to John Williams and say, "Hey, you know, I make movies. I want to hire you." So, or imagine what would have happened if George Lucas had never known about John Williams, because Steven Spielberg wouldn't have been there to tell him, "Look, I've got this guy for Star Wars. He did Jaws for me." That's how it happened. You know, he's an amazing composer. So this is the very unique thing about the relationship between director and composer. Another story to tell you was The Great Alaskan Race. Something that I really appreciated was I wrote a music for a scene whereby Leonard Seppala was in the snow with his then wife, and he found out that she was pregnant. So I wrote that little love theme for them, right? And to that point, we were researching themes. And the director said to me, this really speaks to me, John, that theme, that really speaks to me. And that became the theme for the film. And that's how these things work. I mean, that's a very small example of the work between director and composer. It's like being, to a certain level, it's like being in a band. You know, you write something and guitar player writes something, bass player might say, that's pretty cool, listen to this. Or, you know, don't use that, use this. And that, as I said, that happened to be the main theme for the film, you know, which I then developed. So there are a lot of instances like that, I think, throughout a composer's work.
Well, how does one approach the music for ending credits? Because these are things the audience overlooks when a film is being made.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. And yes, you're right, unfortunately. The end credits, everybody goes. Or turn off the DVD or Blu-ray, which is a real shame. But I don't know if that's applicable anymore as it used to be, because back in the day, of my favorite soundtracks at least, you know, a composer would have the opportunity to go back and write all the themes and write something, you know, without any dialogue or anything else. I think it still happens in films like, for instance, the Infinity Wars. Alan Silvestri went back and on the end credits wrote this beautiful, beautiful thematic material and, you know, revisited everything from the film and wrote this, I don't know how long, 7-10 minutes of music. Or obviously John Williams and all the, you know, Star Wars endings, they're just gems, you know, those pieces of music, absolutely wonderful. Another example was the ending of The Return of the King, where Howard Shore wrote this incredibly massive end credits. Because they had, I don't know if it was, obviously it wasn't I think it wasn't for the theatrical version, but the extended version, they made this mention to every member of the fan club. So there was like, I don't know, 25 minutes of music. So it's incredible. But nowadays, I don't know if nowadays this is applicable. It depends on the film, I would think. You know, if the film has a thematic material and it's orchestral in its nature, you might see that. Otherwise, you might see, maybe hear a song and then come back to the score and end with the song. It varies, really. It really depends on the production.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, I know that there's an upcoming film. When do you start to work on Circle of Threes with Mark and Logan Bruner of Stranger Things?
That's a very good question. Thank you for that. At this point, we don't have a schedule, but I've just attached to another film, which I haven't made an announcement yet. It's on my IMDb, though, so I can speak about it. And it's called Fate. It's directed by Jonathan Baker, who his first film he had as a lead star, Nicolas Cage. So on this film, we haven't got the full list of actors. Actually, I don't think they have been announced yet, but I have actually started working on the film, which is wonderful. So I think this will be first, and then hopefully when everything is underway with the Circle of Threes, which is a real joy to work on the film, we'll proceed with that movie. But again, I think because, you know, the film industry, and then maybe that goes back to the editing and goes back to the production. Maybe we can talk about these things in terms of how do you do one gets ready to score a film and how do these things may overlap? It's because production has become so much easier nowadays. Post-production has become so much easier. Thankfully, to this point, this hasn't happened to me, but I'm telling you, I'm scared of this. I'm scared that I might agree to a film or two and they might completely overlap and sandwich each other, you know. And I remember I found myself working on 7 projects one time. And that was when the lockdown happened. And I was working with Deus. And I had to park a lot of short films because I was working on Deus full time. And I had to apologize to people. You know, some of them been working with them for years. And I had to say, guys, I'm really sorry. I can't do everything. And then I found myself working on a, you know, 17th century film and then into a zombie apocalypse and then into something completely relevant. So, yeah, every single thing that I was working on that particular amount of time split me, you know, creatively into a million pieces. But it had to be done.
Well, wait a minute. You brought up an excellent question. When do you become part of the film? Okay, so do you wait till the whole film has been shot? Does the director maybe send you a few dailies to kind of get the whole process moving along on your end?
No. I'm brought pretty much right at the end, you know, when the film is filmed, but not when the film is finally edited, because that's not right in terms of how much time do you have to write. That would be actually a nightmare, I think, for a composer. I think, yeah, absolutely. I think that the best way to work is when the very first draft is done of the film. You get that, you get a good idea, you start writing, you send a few ideas, right? You have discussions, this, that, the other. Some people are brought at the beginning if necessary, if they want to talk about maybe perhaps writing themes, or maybe somebody wants to actually book you and lock you for a specific amount of time, this is when this might happen. But usually a composer is brought right at the end of the production. Now, when the film is done.
Okay, so is it your music? So let's say the film is done. It's edited, has the music score already done, everything's put together, ready to go. Is it your music score that is also used in a movie trailer?
Not necessarily. Usually what happens is that there are these organizations, studio, shall I put it, trailer houses that films give the music to, because I have a very specific way of writing, and they have a very, very specific way of producing music, right? They have these particular sounds and this particular way. Not necessarily have to have a theme for the film or the trailer, you know, but I think 9 out of 10 times films are given to trailer houses in terms to create their music, to make it really exciting and really in your face and ready to go. Composers like myself can do these things, you know, but usually, as I said, they're given to trailer houses. Other ways that this could happen, sometimes it depends on the agreements you make. Other times you put it together yourself. Maybe they give you the trailer and then you cut bits and pieces from the film score and you put it together in connection, obviously, with the production company. You have several discussions, what they like, what they don't like, and you can create the trailer yourself. But it's not a, it's not, there isn't one way of working. Let me just put it this way, right? So it's several avenues of doing that.
So what else is coming up for you in 2024?
2024, very good question. Actually, as I revealed, this film called Fate, Circle of Threes, and I'm in several talks with people on a constant basis. You know, you have to be, and very happy to say that I'm discussing with several people that I've been working for many, many years now, and hopefully will see me see me out in writing for 2024, you know, and past 2025. There's a wonderful pilot I created the music for David Levy, whom you mentioned at the beginning of this introduction. And it's called Moon Control, which is a satirical 3D animation. And it was lovely because it gave me the opportunity to write very traditionally at the very beginning of the film. And I think this might actually come out right about now in the middle of this month, sorry, end of this month. And I'm meeting with David in London, where he's going to come to make a presentation for the film. So I'm very much looking forward to meeting him here.
Well, you are one busy gentleman, and you know, we have to thank people like you for creating the music behind these films, because it's what actually adds the flavor. And ladies and gentlemen,
that.
You know, if you are into cinema, it's the music behind the visuals, which is extremely important to ignite the emotion within us. It's the actors that play a major role, but the right music score can inspire, it can motivate us, or it makes us sit at the edge of our seat wondering what is lurking behind or within the shadows that is ready to scare us. But to learn more about John Koutsalinas, go to johnkoutsalinas.com at the bottom of your screen for more and listen to some of his musical scores. Just sitting and listening to them without a movie to watch shows you how important music compositions are to film. And for those of you, all of you out there that watch and listen to Bond on Cinema, and you are creating your next film and you're wondering, who do I turn to for the music? Well, John Koutsalinas, well, he's one gentleman that you could actually turn to score your film. And who knows, maybe it's that score that pushes you to the edge of getting an Oscar nomination in the future. And John, I want to thank you so much for spending time with me today and talking film, as well as the important part, the music behind those films.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate that. It was a wonderful discussion. And again, thank you. It's just wonderful to talk to you.
Well, thank you, John. And ladies and gentlemen, hey, you can catch all the replays of all of our interviews with top film directors, producers, screenwriters, and actors, as well as composers. More on our website at bondoncinema.com. We're also available on YouTube at Bond on Cinema and a dozen audio platforms as well. I want to thank you for watching and listening. And as for me, I will either see you at the movies or from the red carpet.